you're gonna be just fine. I'm your number one fan.
She just goes a little mad sometimes.
Have you checked the children?
How do you know my name? I didn't tell you my name.
Hang up.
I didn't tell them my name.
They're all a part of it. They're all parts, all of them.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
I'm afraid!
Don't be afraid!
No. Be afraid.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to All Horror. This is Robin.
This is Lizanne.
This is Madison.
This is Amanda.
And this is Ian.
And tonight we have a pretty full show. It's been a very busy week in the horror world. Ian is back to talk about Lady and White, the newest episode of American Horror Story. So first we'll be covering that, and then we will be doing a review of the best film in the history of the world, Midsommar. But before we get into all of that, let's really quickly, where can we find everyone? Ian, you start. Where can people find you, our resident American Horror Story expert?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Damien Pele, which is DamienPele.
And Amanda?
I'm on Twitter at All Horror Radio, and then on Instagram at Amanda _ All Horror.
And Amanda is like pretty much the only person who properly knows how to use Instagram. We're currently fighting over getting followers, and she is winning the battle.
It's only because I post.
That does kind of help, doesn't it? Madison, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at mads_allhorror or on Instagram at amour.a.mort.
And jingle time. Lizanne.
I'm on Twitter. I've unlocked it again, if you guys can behave yourself. It's at Lizanne, L-I-Z-Z-A-Y-N. And jingle time. I'm on, not that I ever update it, when I do, it's like pictures of places I've been. Instagram, L-I-Z-Z-A-Y-N-S-H-A-A-R-A-W-I, because that's my name, Lizanne Jarawi.
Nice. And no creepers. I will personally come after whoever creeps on Lizanne. She's a nice girl, and she doesn't deserve it.
Stop putting me on, like, random, like, creepy lists on Twitter, please. Like,
please
send me their names.
Okay,
if you're, like writers or screenwriters or horror ladies, that's cool. I'm okay with that. But if it's, like, sexy ladies, no. You will get blocked. I don't like it.
Yeah, we're going
to
get
to anybody. It's gross.
So we can out-creep them.
It's like high school, like, boys writing shit on the bathroom stalls, and it's gross. We should be better than that, guys. All right, so let's just go ahead and get into it. We can catch up on our weeks and stuff later. Let's talk about American Horror Story. And for once, I'm so fucking excited to talk about it.
So I guess that you liked really Lily Rabe coming back.
Lily Rabe is life. Like, she's probably only behind Jessica Lange for me in American Horror Story. But I'll let Ian, why don't you go ahead and do kind of like a quick overview? Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen Lady in White, do not continue. But yeah, go ahead, Ian.
Sure. So it starts with a flashback to what you come to find out later on is Camp Redwood's old name. In 1948, it was Camp Golden Star. And you find out kind of more of Jingle's backstory. And his mother is the Lady in White. And she was responsible for the first massacre that took place there. So you kind of just learn more about that whole backstory, which eventually causes Jingles to decide to kill himself. So he has a better chance of fighting Richard Ramirez as a ghost, apparently. And then you kind of get some like updates with Brooke and her way back to Camp Redwood for the music festival. So Margaret can get hers.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, just really quickly, my general thoughts before we go into plot points and story arc and everything is I loved this episode so much. You know, for me, the 80s kind of influence and the trash has been just a little, like, too hard to swallow. I just hate it so much. But obviously, Lily Rabe's character is inspired by Friday the 13th and, like, Jason's mom.
Yeah.
And I feel like they did such a good job kind of like bringing that inspiration to life, but not being just too copycat, like too, you know, same vein. I think the storyline is incredible. And Mr. Jingles is so great. I went from not caring about him at all in the first couple episodes to like him being one of my top favorites.
Right?
They made him so amazing. Complex. Yeah, they made him so complex.
I thought he was on par with Lily Rabe this episode, like as the best acting between the two of them.
Fully agree.
She must bring it out in people, because like that, I loved all the memes that were going around where like Lily Rabe came in for 8 minutes and taught everybody how to act. Like it was just, it was, yeah.
So what happened?
It's true though.
It's so good. And I feel like, yeah, it made like all of them kind of like step up their game, because like all of it was just, yeah, it was really good this year or this episode. I think the whole Bobby's death being so like Hitchcockian in the way that it was filmed, and like you have like the whole like tension build up release and then build up and then he's, you know, getting his head stuck in a propeller. Yeah, I just feel like the whole way that was filmed and written and just all of her pieces were just huge standouts, and really it makes me miss her for like the rest of the season, because I just want her back.
Me too. Just really quick, and then I'll turn it over to everyone else. John Carroll Lynch is, I know that he's been in the last several seasons of American Horror Story. I, for one, didn't really care about Twisty the Clown. Like, I just, that wasn't a character that really appealed to me at all. As far as Dylan McDermott, I can't stand Dylan McDermott. I
Ben like Harmon. Ugh, yeah.
Don't like him as Harmon.
Oh, I like him.
I don't like him in The Politician. I don't like him in like anything. So he's a fail for me.
I don't mind him.
I like him in LA to Vegas.
Oh my god.
Does he play the pilot?
In what?
You guys know what I'm talking about at all?
What is it?
LA to Vegas, he plays like the womanizing pilot in LA to Vegas. It's a comedy. Then Dermot Mulroney. So, okay. Never mind. I was about to do a sidebar, but I'm not going to do it. Keep going. Never mind. Not going to do my tangent.
I mean, I feel like perfect womanizing asshole. Like, that's perfectly him. So it was really nice watching him get his thumbs cut off.
Cut off? The only thing I think of when I see him is, like, an updated Ross.
Oh, my updated God. Ross Geller.
He was the hunkiest hunk. Well, when I was little, like, he was, like, the thing.
In The Practice, or, I think it was The Practice.
Yeah, that's all I think of, is he's new Ross Geller.
I see that.
Wasn't he Julia Roberts, or maybe I am getting him confused with Dermot Mulroney. Wasn't he the one that was going to marry Julia Roberts in Steel Magnolias?
I haven't seen Steel Magnolias.
Oh my god, I'm so old, you guys.
He was the one who was in the other romantic comedy with Julia Roberts.
I'm sure he can't either, so.
The Oscar show.
But okay, so in the truck, though, the truck scene, where he's like, you're going to drag her, or else I'm going to shoot you. That was so brilliant. Mm-hmm. I loved that whole scene.
Yeah,
I loved it. And I was cheering.
This whole episode felt much more like, I don't know, I felt more tension, like, because you care about these characters at this point, or at least I do, apparently.
I do too.
Right? And like, you're watching it and it's like, you're, yeah, on the edge of your seat, like multiple times throughout the episode, more so, I feel like, than any of the other episodes this season. And I really liked this season, but this one was just like, definitely going to be highlights. Like,
no, I was texting Robin. I was saying the whole time I was texting her while I was watching it, saying normally this is the point where I check out of American Horror Story every season, and I'm actually more on board than I am. Like, usually, I mean, they've got me. I'm hooked. I can't wait to see where this goes from here.
And I love the tie-in with her, the lady in white, being almost like witchy. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, her whole, all of her, what is it? Her blood, her pain, her rage pouring out into the earth, which is so Skathach from from Roanoke, and it's just like that whole blood curse, and there's no older ghosts that we've seen so far older than her, so I feel like she's the first, she's the like genesis of this whole thing. So it makes her very like witchy of like, I had a feeling, I could feel, you know, my like primal, you know, my children, and then she's like, oh, but it was you, the and then making son. Her and her Dewey Cox story, the wrong son died. Never gonna make it, you know, just like so good. And then having her be responsible for the 1970s massacre is just, all of it is just so like, it's because I don't like you, like I just so good.
Well, and then when she tells him basically that he cared about something, so she had to destroy it. I loved that conversation. I thought it was so good.
The dialogue was so on point. Just in this entire episode, the dialogue, the acting, like the cinematography, like I literally have zero complaints on this episode at all. Like at all.
Wow.
I don't care very much for McDermott, but I thought that, I mean, that was, I cared, you know, about what was happening. It was really suspenseful. The tension was there. Who is the inspiration for his character? Like, what do you think the point of his character is?
So I was trying to look up some of the lore, because I've heard of different stories with the killer in the back seat, and you know how he talks about flashing the lights and that sort of thing. And it's a very common like legend. And then it was also not the exact same, but like a different arc, I guess, to the story. It's also in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It's called High Beams. A similar story where someone's flashing their lights at someone, but the reason they're flashing their lights is because the lady that's driving has a serial killer in the back seat, and the person sees the serial killer get up with the knife, and every time he flashes the high beams to try to scare the serial killer to stop them from killing. If that makes any sense. But I kept looking it up because I'm like, I know this story from somewhere. Did it actually happen? And all I can find is that story with the flashing lights.
That makes sense. Something too that I read on Reddit on the sub for American Horror Story is that people are speculating because Ryan Murphy has to bring everything in a circle. Like everyone has to be connected, you know, to some, in some degree. And so everyone's speculating that Dylan McDermott's character is actually the original Nurse Rita, like her brother. And that because Nurse Donna took over, you know, basically a subdued Nurse Rita. She killed her, right?
Well, she didn't kill her. Jingles.
She's responsible.
She's responsible for, like indirectly responsible for her death. And that Bruce basically has targeted Donna since that all that shit went down. And so now he is stalking Donna. So that's apparently like the biggest, most popular theory right now, which I have not subscribed to quite yet.
I mean, that would, I guess, makes sense, but like, how would he know that they were going to the roller rink? I feel like that was kind of
happenstance.
Yeah, like he saw two girls and he was like, "Huh, maybe I can get one of them to kill the other one."
I don't think he's going to be in any of the future episodes. So I feel like this was his contribution of just being like a wannabe Richard Ramirez and looking like
maybe.
Is he not listed? As a
I don't think so.
I haven't seen him. I did see though that Finn Whitrock is
Dandy.
Coming back. Yeah, for the finale. I don't know what he's going to be. Maybe Billy Idol. Like, I don't know.
Oh my God, that would be the funniest goddamn thing in all of the world. I would just die.
Who played the guy from Casa Gugu? Was that not him?
No.
Who? I'm going to look it up.
A rando, I think.
Yeah. But loving that knowing that he made a deal with the devil for his one hit wonder song.
That was so brilliant. I loved it.
And they're like everywhere. Isn't that the song from Stranger Things too?
It was a different.
It was a Neverending Story was just the lead singer did it. It was Lime All.
Okay.
But that's the one that they were all singing.
Okay. I was like, I recognize the guy, but I don't know. And then I thought it was interesting, Montana wanting the paranormal investigators to come because they might be able to break the curse.
That was the absolute, that made it for me. That entire line and conversation completely made the entire camp, them being stuck there, completely worth it. I find it to be hilarious.
So random. And then one thing I wanted to bring up too, Donna. I still think there's a twist with her coming.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Something happens with her. I don't know if it necessarily, like, I feel like we've gotten more her backstory than I was ever expecting to get. Mm-hmm. So I'd be interested, yeah, where they take it next. I mean, she clearly wants to see this to the end and kind of like make right what she did. And she realizes
maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know if she actually wants to make it right. So, if she didn't want Brooke to find the concert, why the hell would she leave it on the nightstand, for one?
That's true.
So she left that there. And I had the same
thought as well.
And that was like blatant, like, oh, I didn't want you to see that. Like, come on. Then don't put it in the damn room. Like, you can leave it outside. And then she chose her words very carefully. So, you know, when Brooke has her up against the wall with the needle or something, she says, I know there are things waiting for us when we die. I'm just trying to make sure I go where the good things are, not the other place. So she doesn't say not hell or not, you know, the negative place. She just said where the good things are. So isn't unlimited lives the good things? Or like being able to come back?
I'm more thinking now, because in the next, or not the next episode, but the episode after next, she talks about being the final girl. And if this was one of her experiments to kind of try to find out, like, what makes the final girl, what makes, and it's very Martyrs-esque, actually, if you kind of think about it, her whole, like, scientific approach to this whole thing. That would be very interesting, and I would like to see them go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. I really do think that those words were very careful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a twist coming with Donna yet again, because you think she means, oh, I don't want to go to the bad place, but she says the other place, not the bad place.
Mm. Interesting.
So I watched that scene multiple times and wrote it down because I'm like, this seems strange. Oh,
or yeah. Is she bringing her to Redwood to Satan or to Ramirez or to, yeah,
exactly. Huh. Like maybe she's bringing her as an offering even because Satan wanted her in the jail.
Yeah.
So. I think there's more
to it. That's an interesting idea, too. I really like Brooke, finally. They called her a badass for the second time, and this is the first time I actually agreed with them. So, yeah.
That's true. Oh, and something I read actually on IMDb, they said Mr. Jingle's house appears to be the same exact set as Kit Walker's in season 2. Just kind of
I had that same thought too, but I was like, well, he's supposed to be in Alaska, so it's can't be the same thing. But I remember looking at it thinking like that it is the alien house. Yeah.
So there's another asylum nod, I guess.
I'm happy, call it that. I didn't even notice that. Good pickup, guys.
And then just the Lady in White lore all around. Like there's so much folklore around it. It's almost in every country. Like they have some sort of Lady in White or Woman in White as a ghost that haunts rural areas and is always associated with a tragedy. So they pulled from a lot of different lures, I think, in this one.
I would also like to piggyback off of a point that Ian made earlier about how people are saying that Lily Rabe, when she came on screen, it's almost like everyone's acting got better. And she improved everyone's acting. Notice, though, that she did not have a scene with fucking Emma Roberts. So, therefore, Emma Roberts is still failing at acting.
She's the only one that didn't get help.
Yeah, she did not get that, like, extra credit session.
So. I like her. She did
a great job.
I felt this episode more so than the others were, like, she finally is, like, I don't know, confident in herself and speaking more eloquently and to like, yeah, what she's trying to say, there's no more lines like fuck your research or anything like that, which was absolutely laughable.
I like Emma Roberts when she plays the bitchy girl. I mean, I think that she's a flat actress. I think she's a one trick pony, and that's pretty much the only like thing that she can do well. She does not play meek, mild, and quiet well at all to me. It's just so, and not because that's how I've always seen her on American Horror Story. I've seen her in other things. It's just like she doesn't pull it off well. So I do agree though that now that she's gaining more confidence in the show, you know, and she's standing up for herself and becoming more of a badass, like she's easier to stomach. But yeah, I was like, Lily Rabe did not get a hold of Emma Roberts.
No, she didn't.
Right. And then Trevor reunites with Montana. What do you think's gonna go on there?
I don't know. I was surprised she didn't kill him. Like I was waiting for it, and then yeah, that didn't happen. So
he technically, she doesn't know I'm thinking the Margaret thing. Well, I guess maybe she might have seen it. I guess she doesn't really have a way to see the news, though, unless she, you know, the paper that she stole from the campers.
Yeah.
But she doesn't really have any reason to not like him, right?
I mean, she saw her kind of do her whole, like, revealing of what, you know, the whole music festival is going to be. So, like, he was there, she was there, there was that whole thing. So, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I wonder if she's going to use him as, like, a pawn to get to Margaret.
Yeah, I mean, it would be smart to do that, so.
I wonder what the festival is going to be like when it finally happens, because who did he kill? They've already killed one musician.
Mm-hmm.
And his entire crew. So, like, is that just going to go completely unnoticed? Are they going to ditch
him? Oh, I'm sure. She's going to try to capitalize on it somehow.
Or they come back as ghosts and still play.
They're going to have their own, like, fucking Woodstock of ghosts. Like, at the rate of how many corpses are on that camp, it's going to be, like, a music festival, God. But, like, in itself. So.
Right? And then the next episode is Rest in Pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I would just want to know who's going to be
Sarah Paulson.
I think she bailed.
Yeah, she, like, bailed.
She had put it up on something. I shared it at one point, I think on Instagram, maybe. That, yeah, she was rumored to be on it. I think she was going to be the Lady in White, and then she bailed, and then, like, almost the same day she bailed, Lily Rabe was rumored to be it.
What?
So I'm wondering if the role went to Lily after Sarah.
There's so many fake theories and crap going on. Like, I now just no longer listen to anything. I just, especially after that whole, like, there's an asylum clue or whatever the hell. And it was just so, like,
they said a word, okay?
Whatever. Like, I was just like, I'm not listening to any of that crap anymore. I'm not reading any of it. I don't believe in any of it. They will give me whatever they give me, and that'll be that.
Well, with the Sarah Paulson coming on, I do recall, and I did actually watch the interview where she said that she was going to be making a cameo on it. And then, was it like last week or so, someone asked her at a convention that she was at, and she said, no, she will not be on the season. Which, okay, so I've run out of TV shows officially. Like, 90 Day Fiancé just came back, so, like, I'm really pretty busy with
that.
That
doesn't count as anything.
It does.
I don't even know what it is.
It's life. The trashiest shit you've ever seen. But I started to watch, like, you know, going on a Ryan Murphy kick, The People versus O.J. Simpson. So I've started, like, watching that. And I can only see Sarah Paulson as Marcia Clark now. Like, with a perm. Like, for always and forever. I will always now see Sarah Paulson, like, with short, curly, nasty perm.
She was filming that while she was filming Hotel and being Sally. And there was this interview that I had seen, and it was just her talking about, like, the dichotomy where she's like, yeah, at nights I'm doing this, and during the day I'm doing that, and just how difficult that was and what a strain. And I just thought, well, it works, because both characters she did flawlessly. So I just felt like, yeah, I can only imagine.
She's incredible. I truly believe that she is, like, the current equivalent of Meryl Streep. But even more talented, dare I say.
I agree.
I like her.
She's going to be back, though. Like, not this season. Oh,
I'm
sure. But she will be back.
But did you see Jessica Lange said that she would, in fact, be possibly open to another season of American Horror Story?
If the right people were in it.
Yes.
Oh, I see. That'd be interesting. Mm-hmm.
But Ryan Murphy did say something about how there's, like, an open invitation to everyone that's been on it, that they're always welcome back, and he'll make a role for them.
After I finished The Politician, I wanted to really see what Jessica Lange's take was on it, because she said that she was so kind of, like, tired of doing horror and wanted to do something comedic instead. So that's why she took The Politician. And then I watched a follow interview up with her, and she actually calls American Horror Story, like, the crew, like, her family, and said that she would completely be open to doing another season. She said that it got stale. Like, her favorite season was Freak Show. And so, like, depending on the writing and storyline, she said, if Ryan Murphy approached me with the right script, I would be all aboard. So please, Ryan Murphy, get your shit together and get her back.
Well, she, like, wrote a lot of her scenes almost, I thought, for a Freak Show. Like, she said, I want to do this, this, and this, make it happen. And he did.
Yeah. I mean, I remember them talking about, like, he's obviously putting his spin on it because she thought about doing the freak show in its heyday and he wanted to do it at the very end. And so, like, there were little things like that where, like, the whole feel of it kind of changed, I think, all for the better. But I mean, yeah, if you have somebody like Jessica Lange, you let her do whatever the hell she wants. I still think she would have been perfect for Donna. I think yes. That would have just been so good.
Yeah. She's very conniving mm-hmm. in a good way.
Yeah. So I hope they do what they were going to do originally for season 5, where it's like almost like a Gettysburg type thing where it's this, it's like a field in the Civil War and there's like all these ghosts and this, I mean, not maybe directly after this season because it is a field of ghosts, but I would like them to do something like that. I thought that was just such a cool idea. And she was, yeah, she had some interesting ideas for that too.
No, I know that last week for last week's episode, we were kind of at the point where Ryan Murphy said that he would decide what the season 10 was going to be, like the week of Halloween or a couple days after. Has anyone heard any updates on that? Has he made any other statements?
Not that
he
I know.
He just said by Halloween was his goal. So I'm assuming that it has been done. Like he probably submitted it to something.
Interesting. I know they bought a bunch of stories, like the rights to a bunch of, I think it's called Creepypasta.
Oh,
I
don't know.
Yeah, they bought a bunch of rights. This is a few years ago, and I have yet to see anything else about it. So I'd be interested to see what that even is.
There's already a series
with Channel Zero.
Yeah,
there's a series based off of Creepypasta already.
Is it really? I see. Uh-huh. Apparently, yeah, they bought some rights to different
If the next American Horror Story is Slender Man, I'm going to call it.
Preach.
Yeah, I think we all will have to.
Oh, God.
But he said he had 2 or 3 ideas already and that he just needed to narrow it down. I want that orphanage thing.
I think that would be a good, like, series ender, I feel like, because you could easily pull from so many of the different seasons through that one.
Well, then I don't want it. I don't want it to be the series ender.
Yeah. Well, not next. Yeah, I was gonna say not next, but I do want it. I do think it's a great idea.
And aliens are coming back at some point, I heard.
Yeah.
I would assume so.
Yeah. And I think it's gonna be the same ones from Asylum.
That better be the Asylum tie-in. I better get Lana Winters. I better get Jessica Lange as my favorite character in the history of the world. And yeah, I'm all aboard that. Any predictions for next week?
Jingles and Ramirez are going to fight. I'm guessing Ramirez is going to, you know, quote unquote, like kill Jingles, but he's already dead. So he gets to like continue going and that'll probably surprise Ramirez. I don't know what they're going to do with the dead band. I'm guessing Margaret's going to cover it up somehow. Silly, just like her weird antics.
In Trevor, plain sight.
That's oh, of course.
Where it's Trevor's, just kind of like, yeah.
Right. Montana and Trevor, I think, are going to scheme. And then I just want to know who Billy Idol's going to be.
Yeah.
I feel like the concert will probably be the last one during the final girl. But I wonder if they're going to, like, end it with who he is or, like, start the concert at the end of this next episode.
They've made a huge deal out of it.
Yeah, watch it be Evan Peters.
I was just about to say that.
That's what I read. A lot of people are thinking.
Oh my God, what a horrible job he would do.
Well, Finn might be able to do it.
I can see that. That one. But I think, I don't know about, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. I still think that they should get the real him.
He's just available. Him.
Yeah.
I want him to be like the MC or something. Like, I want him to make an appearance, but... Or I guess if they just like hardcore computerize his face.
Or no, not even. Just be like, wow, you look like shit. Like the entire time everybody just keeps telling him he looks like shit.
Oh my God, that would be so ridiculous.
I think it's a great idea. We're like, yeah, no explanation. Just everybody just keeps looking at him like he keeps doing coke or something. And just like, God, you look like shit. I think it's a great idea. Him dying at the end of the 80s like he was supposed to.
Bad.
Wow.
Well, that's kind of a running theme, though, is just like wanting to be remembered after the 80s are over. Because Ramirez mentions it, and then doesn't Alex at one point say like he wants to up his kills so he's remembered?
Alex.
The
hitchhiker.
Dylan. Yeah, Dylan McDermott.
Oh yeah. Also the whole like Brooke and her idea, like idolizing the 80s that she wasn't a part of. It's just like you're just idolizing denim. So like it's okay. Like you can always have your denim. It's okay. You don't have to worry. It's back so now. Dumb. Yeah. I have my denim outfits already. So.
You would have your outfits.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, Rest in Pieces will be on Wednesday. And I'm thinking the concert will start at the end of Rest in Pieces. And then the shit show will be the final girl.
The Killing Fields. Yeah. And Brooke will survive.
I really hope the paranormal investigators come and just solve this mystery for everyone.
I want it to be Cricket. I know it's not going to be, but I want it. It's time. Bring Cricket back.
Start a hashtag.
I did read that 2019 is going to be shown in, like, they're going to time jump to 2019 at some point. So
yeah, I shared something on Twitter that they took a picture of the set and it's super aged. And like weathered. Mm-hmm. So it is going to be some sort of flash forward. I'm guessing for the last episode.
Mm-hmm. They just couldn't stand being in 1984 any longer.
But really, do you blame them?
No, I get it. Yeah.
But yeah, there are pictures on my Twitter of how it looked at the beginning and then how it looks now. And then for some reason, there's a dog there. And I'm hoping it has a big role. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I noticed first.
Where are the corgis? For sure, the entire time you're watching the episode. Where's the corgis?
Yeah, and I will own that. I really hope they come back.
I want a character about booty. A demon dog. Come on, give me a demon dog.
Talk to Ryan Murphy. Send him some photos.
Manchester Terrier. Demon dog is perfect.
Any other theories?
I think that's all I got from Next Door Story. I like, think I'm out. I'm on fumes now.
Anyone have any final thoughts from American Horror Story? Going once, going twice?
No.
Good. Like,
All right. Well, Ian, thank you.
Yes, always. Thank you for having me.
And
all right.
Next week is going to be fun, too.
Cool. See you then.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye, Ian.
Bye.
All right. So, take a quick break before we get into Midsommar and just catch up with everyone. Lizanne, did you do anything over the last week since Halloween? Watch anything?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I'm sure I've watched things, but nothing that really stands out that was so amazing that I can stop talking about it. Like, Midsommar is the tops. It's the best.
It absolutely is. Madison, have you done anything over the last week?
No, I've actually been fighting off a head cold.
You've been living your own horror show?
Yeah. It's been a
Cronenberg film over there.
Pretty gross over here.
It's like The Fly.
Yeah.
Amanda, have you done anything over the last week? God, y'all are boring. Jesus.
I know. Well, I've also been sick. You can probably hear it. Mm-hmm. I sound ridiculous. Halloween, we went trick-or-treating. For some reason, my son did not get any drugs or razor blades or needles.
How disappointing.
Yeah, I've been sending everyone all the silly candy memes that I find. And the latest one was about the car warranty expiring.
That's
I thought it was funny. It made me laugh.
It was
very hilarious.
So someone took a picture of like a candy bar open and it had a little note in it. And it said, "We've been trying to reach you about your car's warranty." I thought it was funny. Someone on our like city Facebook page said that they found a random pill in their daughter's bag.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, it looked like a Smartie to me, but sure. Like an open white Smartie. We did not find any pills.
No.
Fortunately. And yeah, just packing up some of the Halloween stuff. So nothing exciting. I'm kind of sad packing it up, though.
I know. We didn't pack ours up so much as we moved it from the front yard to the porch. So it's slowly making its way to the shed out back.
Why does it
very slowly? Let me say this very slowly.
Well, by pack up, mine is on my kitchen table. So I got not as far as you did. Yours is at least outside.
I was terrible this year. We didn't put ours out to about 2 days before Halloween. And then we packed it all up like 2 days after. We were really bad.
Aw, that sucks.
We just kind of like whirlwind.
Mine's more trying to differentiate what is normal home decor versus what does go in the Halloween box.
Right. Well, that's how my bathroom got decorated. It was last year's Halloween decorations that we just didn't take down. So we just have a spooky year-round bathroom now.
Mm-hmm. Our bathroom decor is so, like, this year shopping went to Michael's and they had some really cheap, shitty, like, fake x-rays, you know, like bones and skeletons and whatnot, that they turned into wall hangings. Well, I was like,
I thought they were cool.
Well, here's the thing, I thought the concept was cool, so I went on eBay and actually bought legit old x-rays.
Oh, and that's cool. Did you frame them?
Yeah, and then put them in our bathroom. So our entire bathroom is like actual legit x-rays of different body parts and stuff. Cool concept.
Is there any like concerning
that sounds x-rays? Cool.
Yeah. Are they weird or are they like normal bodies?
They're normal bodies. There's nothing like spectacular. I will send a picture and let you guys see. And then I got the Hue light. So like my bathroom is pretty pumped.
Mine says above our closet, I have sign that says, let's get spooky.
Aw.
Since we're talking about bathrooms.
I'll have you know that since Jackie's gone, we did not. I hate carving pumpkins. I'm not a pumpkin carver. I don't like it. I know. I just don't like it. I find it to be a waste of time. I'm not artistic in any way. And I always end up trying to do something elaborate and then like cutting too deep and fucking the entire thing. So be sad, Amanda, that when you send me shit in the mail that you won't have a rotten pumpkin for like the next 4 months as your marker.
I'm not going to have that, or I will, because I need you to track one down.
Amanda.
Otherwise, how do I know it got delivered?
It's true. So, like, with my house, I have this, like, long walkway up to my front door, and so last year, we carved pumpkins and set them out and then forgot about them, because I'd never go through the front door. And so Amanda, when Amazon delivered a package from Amanda, and so she checked the tracking, and it was literally them sitting, they had sat it beside this, like, literally disgusting, rotten, molded over pumpkin. It was so embarrassing.
Like, you might have a problem.
Amanda's like, Robin, you may need to take care of that.
That's how I check on her, is I send weird packages to her house.
Yeah.
See if she cleaned her porch.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that was really bad. I was a miserable bitch this year, and I shut off my porch light. I pulled the blinds, like, on all sides of my house, and I just watched movies, and I ordered a pizza. Yeah, I enjoyed my Halloween. It was very peaceful and quiet, and I watched a bunch of, like, really terrible movies.
I saw some really cute costumes. I was very impressed. I saw a little, like, maybe 2-year-old as Bride of Chucky, and it was adorable. And there was this girl that came up as we were leaving, and I set up, like, a table with candy for everyone. And she was so excited to be Pennywise. Like, this young girl was this creepy Pennywise costume. It was actually done very well, and she had the red balloon. And she was very proud of herself for being a creepy clown. And I was very happy with her family.
I'm, like, really super impressed how many parents got, like, the full-on horrifying It costume for, like, their second and third grade children.
Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about, like, blood coming out of his mouth, the razor-sharp teeth. I mean, apparently the stakes have changed with Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely need to step it up again.
My favorite costume of all time, I saw it this year. It was a dad, and he had 3 daughters, and he dressed them out in, as A League of Their Own. And so they had, like, the little Peaches costume.
That is adorable.
I died. And then he was Tom Hanks, and so he was fake drinking a beer. And then his little daughters had, like, the little pink, you know, baseball skirts and outfits on. I died. But anyone have anything else they did want to talk about before we move on to hashtag the best movie in the history of the world?
No, I don't think so. Just Halloween. Halloween's fun. I want it back. I hate that Christmas is everywhere. Makes me sad.
Oh my God. So I was driving today and unfortunately I had to go into the parking lot of Walmart to cut through from a Starbucks to the main road. And they have Christmas trees out in the front and they've wrapped all of their poles in the red candy cane. It's like, Jesus, y'all wasted no time.
No. Like Halloween Day they were doing it.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I'm not ready. It just needs to stop. Whatever happened after Thanksgiving? Or like Thanksgiving week, then I think that's socially acceptable.
I feel like at least Home Goods has been really bulking out with the fall stuff. At least our Home Goods is like 50 or like 70% fall themed stuff, not even Halloween or Christmas. It's just like fall. Do people actually buy that?
Fall stuff?
Yeah, no. Just generic fall.
Old women, I think. Ugh. I don't know of anyone that decorates fall. I don't know.
Yeah. I remember growing up, like, it was, like, the thing to do in Texas, like, like, the same thing, like, with those vests that had, like, all the, like the metal embroidery on it.
I just pictured you in one.
Metal embroidery?
Like, the stupid belt.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. Madison owns three.
Is this a Texan thing?
I think so. Like, you, like... There was, like, one lady in the town who made them, and so, like, all the mothers had to have them. It was, like, yeah, those little, like crimped, like, little metal embellishments on their vest, or, like, the like, hand-drawn, like, kids.
Okay, hold on. Hold on, okay. I think I found one.
So, 1998, Lizanne is, like, really offended right now and, like, is going to, like, start spamming my Twitter account with, like, psychobilly YouTube videos
from, hey, like Reverend Horton
Heat and all this kind of stuff. So,
no, okay, I like so psychobilly. I'm good.
So, this is a denim jacket, but they used to do it to their vests, too. If you look at the top of it, you'll see those little metal embellishments on there.
Those are brooches, right?
No, they're not brooches. They're like, like not stapled, but like crimped on.
Ooh. Well, I know what I want for Christmas.
Lord.
We will share these with the show because they need to
be
shared.
We have gone so far, like digressed so far, you guys.
And you know what? Whoever doesn't like it, I don't.
Well, this is called All Horror, Lizanne. This is
horrific, you guys.
This
will give you nightmares.
It will.
Yeah, and then we'll be waiting for Madison's photo shoot.
If Mandy sponsors me, you'll see me in this vest and just those high waisted spider underwear. I've got my eye on.
Oh my God!
Let me go ahead and tweet MeUndies real quick.
An offer they can't refuse.
Right, right. And then you're going to be on the creeper list.
Hey, there you go. It won't just be me.
Nope, you guys can be on there together.
Creeper buddies.
Aw. I want you guys to do a co-photo shoot once you get on the same list.
Call us, MeUndies.
All right. It is Midsommar time, so.
Woohoo.
Yay. So, Midsommar is the 2019 film by Ari Aster. Basically, his second film after Hereditary. His second full-length feature film coming off Hereditary, which is... I did not realize how controversial Hereditary actually was until recently when I started reading reviews. And it's, you know, I guess with all things A24, you love it or you hate it. And Toni Collette is a living goddess and should be protected at all costs. Just saying. But, so Midsommar is basically per IMDb. Are we going spoil? Yeah, let's go full on spoilers.
Yeah.
I think people have had plenty of time to see it at this time.
Yeah.
So per the lovely website known as IMDb, a couple travels to Sweden to visit a rural hometown's fabled midsummer festival. What begins as a retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult. I feel like that maybe oversimplifies it a tiny bit. However, that is the core of the story. So just quick thoughts before we get into a discussion. Martyrs has been my favorite film pretty much since, I would say, 2010. It just blew me away. It just elicited emotions from me that I had never actually experienced in a film before. I was completely blown away by it. Midsommar did the exact same thing, which it's a completely different type of film. It's not really, quote-unquote, extreme. It's not even excessively gory. It's such a slow burn. And I think that's why a lot of people hate it so much. And that's the main critique I've heard of it, is nothing fucking happens. Nothing happens. Literally, it's like 3 hours long and nothing happens. But to me, a lot happens. And the care and like attention to detail that Ari Aster put into just the film as a whole, the set pieces, God, it's almost like David Fincher film where every single frame has some sort of symbolism or background item. You know, everything is perfectly in place. Midsommar is the same way. Almost every single frame has an Easter egg, a clue, foreshadowing, you know, something. It's just, it is the richest, most like complex film that I have seen in so long. And I've already seen it 4 times now. And I'm still waiting on the Blu-ray cut of the director's cut, the Blu-ray of the director's cut, which I think currently, correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone knows off the top of your head, is only available in Europe at the moment.
I believe so, but if you want to watch some of the deleted scenes that weren't in the regular version, I have found them on YouTube, so I did watch those.
Oh, I have seen the director's cut, but I want it on Blu-ray. The Blu-ray, just like, God, it's so gorgeous. It's one of the most gorgeous films I've ever seen, too. So the film takes place in Sweden during the Midsummer Festival, where it's pretty much 24 hours of light. So it flips the horror trope on its head of, you know, everything bad happens in the darkness, and you have evil right in daylight, in daytime, you know? So the white versus dark. It's just so fucking incredible. But first, let's do, like, everyone can give their general thoughts before we kind of, like, go through all the layers of this. Liz, let's start with you.
I want everyone else to speak first because here's the deal. I do this thing where this is not a knock to anyone. I'm not trying to insult anyone or make any kind of comment on anyone else's viewing habits. This is just me personally. I really love how certain movies are puzzles, and I like to pick them apart and make my own decisions about things and maybe it says more about me than about everyone else, how I interpret what I watch on the movie screen. So I watched the film 1.5 times. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch it more than once, though I really wanted to, and I still want to. I want to own it really badly. It's on my Christmas, like, Amazon wish list. But then today I sat down. I said, oh, that's right. We're supposed to go over Midsommar today. And so I started watching all these videos about, the ending of Midsommar, and, all these secrets of Midsommar. And I didn't get that at all. Like, right. There were all these things in there that I was like, what? That's not my interpretation of it. Or they would say something that's like the top layer, but not all the different layers and all the, so I felt like there was the story, but then there are all these layers and symbolism and things like that. And so I thought either I'm reading way more into it, or it says way more about how my mind works than I don't know. So everyone else gets to talk, and I'll say my little bit at the end, because apparently what I saw is not what apparently the entire rest of the world saw, and including what the director says he made. So everyone else gets to talk first.
I think it is a film like that, where there's a lot of different interpretations and ways to view it and understand it, which I think makes it elevated, like that you can get 20 different things from the actual same movie. I kind of made the mistake. Well, I shouldn't say it was a mistake. It was like a pleasant surprise. I read an article about the hidden things to look for when you're watching it before I saw the movie. But I thought that added to it, like the hidden face, like her sister's face in the trees, that when it actually came up, I was looking for it. And I was like, you know, it gives you kind of chills because it is a little frightening, like not like super scary, but like, I don't know. The symbolism for it was just good.
It scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, like, I like movies that can get you to talk. And I was texting Robin while we were watching it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this painting totally gives away everything, doesn't it? And like, I was giving her what I thought and she wouldn't tell me if I was right or wrong. I was right on most of it though, right?
A good chunk of it, yes.
Yeah. So I like that. I like, I know Lizanne already said like a lot of foreshadowing, and I do want to go back and watch it and look for some of the other things that I read about, but I didn't necessarily remember to look for. So like pausing it at all the paintings, like everywhere they go, and finding the foreshadowing and the symbolism in each painting, I want to go back and do. Like, I've seen some screenshots online, but they don't have all of them. So yeah, it's a pretty movie. I like that you get to pick it apart. Like Lizanne said, it's a puzzle. Everyone can interpret it different ways and find different themes throughout it, which I thought was cool. I'm in the middle. Like, I don't not like it. Like, I did enjoy watching it, and it, you know, it's a very long movie. We started it late in the evening, and I was still like totally awake for the whole thing. So it did keep my attention. I think I need to watch it again and find more of the puzzles, because I think I enjoyed that part the most than everything else. I don't know. I'm rambling. Madison.
So I really dug it. I agree that it's a slow burn, but it doesn't feel slow. And I think if you're expecting kind of a slasher flick, you're going to be disappointed and you're going to think it's really boring. But it's one of those, it certainly is a Rorschach test, but it also, the more that you look at it or the deeper that you look, you'll always find something, right? There's so many layers on layers and things that are hidden, and your first time, you just can't absorb it all. Like, there's way too much. And I went on YouTube and watched a bunch of videos about things you missed and different meanings and what does this do? And I have yet to find the bottom of this interpretation well, or like the hidden stories or deeper meaning. Also, I had a realtor a few years ago who told me that if I took hair from my head and buried it in the front yard of a property, that I would get that property. And I thought she was a fucking kook. But then after seeing this movie, I think she might have been onto something.
Well, I was there when you pulled your hair out and we buried it by that tree. It did not work.
It did not work. But
don't cut your hair and bury it.
Look, it could be because it was the wrong hair from the wrong area. You know what I'm saying?
Right, or you didn't pull it. You cut it. You didn't pull it out.
Right. I think maybe she did pull it out. Root.
Oh my God.
Well, I ran my fingers through my hair and like in a few strands came out. I didn't like yank it out from the roots or anything.
Okay.
Next time I'll give you a buzz cut and we'll just bury all of it. All like 6 pounds.
Well, no, I think I need to like do different hair, if you know what I'm saying.
We'll do both just in case.
I need to pee on that property.
Yes. But I was there for that, and
did you have any other commentary, Madison? Just off like your general like first impression.
Oh, first impression. It's so gorgeous. It's just, I mean, I'm all about a flower crown and a white linen dress. Like this place looked like paradise.
It absolutely is paradise. Even the buildings are just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it's like it's so simple, and it's not over the top. To where it's like a caricature. It's so simple in its execution that it's very believable. Like, you think that this could happen. And I'm excited to just talk about all the other things that are in the movie.
And Lizanne Schwabi.
Okay, so I'm watching all these videos and they're all about, so there's all these pictures about foreshadowing. Yes. Yes, there are. Very good. Yeah. I mean, we all saw that and we all got that. And there's all these runes and yes, perfect. Wonderful. I like that a lot. I love how the very first thing we see, it tells the whole story, but we don't know what the story is yet. So we can't interpret it. And I loved it. And that whole like, oh, it's going to be a puzzle. I got all excited. And then we start the show, we start the movie and everyone's like, oh, so it's about a breakup. And I'm like, yes. It's about a breakup. Okay. That's the first story. That's the flat story. And then that's the, you know, the very, very basis story. And then I find it come to find out, the director's even like, yes, I wrote it when I was going off a really bad breakup. And I was so disappointed because that's the story. That's it. It's about a really bad breakup. No, it's about, this is me. This is my interpretation without watching any of the videos. It's about grief. Mm-hmm. It's about this woman, young woman who's, family and goes through this horrible loss of a double murder suicide, and no one knows how to handle it. Her boyfriend doesn't know how to handle it, and he stays with her because he was going to break up with her, but now she had this horrible tragedy and he can't break up with her because he'd be this big jerk face. And his friends, except for Pele, are like, God, it's been like 6 months. Why is she still going on about her dead family? She's such a bummer, you know? And, oh, we're going to go party in Sweden. Ugh, do you have to bring her? And the only person that seems like he's actually happy about it is Pele. And they get to this commune and everyone's so welcoming to her. And it's like they're expecting her. And everyone keeps saying, we're so glad you're here. Like, oh, yeah, welcome, guys. Come on. We're so glad you're here to her. Like, she's expected. Like, she's welcomed in. Like, they're – it's foreseen almost. And throughout this whole thing, she keeps taking prescription drugs. She's on Ativan. Mm-hmm. She's popping Ativan. She's borrowing sleeping pills from Josh to help her sleep because it is sunlight almost 24 hours a day. There's like an hour, hour and a half of dark every night, which you never even see, I don't think. It's always bright light. But slowly they start giving her hallucinogenics. They're all natural. Like everything starts to be all natural. Everything they do is all natural. They start slowly bringing her over to this all natural kind of thing. They start slowly bringing her over to their way of thinking. They start slowly embracing her. So she goes from this Western idea and her boyfriend, Christian, and this Christian Western idea of how grief is something that you need to push down and you need to pretend like it doesn't actually exist and you need to be okay and like you're burdening people if you express your grief. She had this situation where not only is it okay to express your grief, but others will help you express it and they will literally hold you and become like a conduit to express your grief. They share in your grief and it's almost beautiful. And for like the first time almost ever, she feels this sense of acceptance. And each day she's there, she feels more loved and more accepted. I mean, her boyfriend didn't remember her birthday, mm-hmm. but Pele did.
Mm-hmm. And he brought it up in front of him.
Mm-hmm. Right, to remind him. And then he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, sorry, I forgot. And it was like
half-assed cake.
The days and everything, and here's this weird cake I found. I mean, and this other – so I'm sorry, I'm going to refer back to my notes real quick. So these people get invited in, again, the whole Western versus the pagan culture. They don't respect the culture. They treat everyone like they're freaks. I mean – I can't remember the guy's name. Is it Will? He like pees on the sacred tree. The Mark. Guy that
Will Poulter, who plays Mark. Mark's the asshole.
Mark. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he like the vapor guy.
Yeah.
He's like vaping while they're walking up and seeing the stiv when she first calls everyone together, and then she says, you know, my flame will go no higher. And then we later realize that's because they're at the end of their lives, those two people that she's talking about. Also, there's a video on businessinsider.com, and they're talking about how with Reuben, it's Ari Aster was making a commentary about how, you know, he's purposely inbred, so he supposedly has this like clear vision, you know, in the society, which is basically a commentary on the growing nationalism in Sweden and about how the far right is, you know, getting a foothold in Sweden. And I honestly thought it was more harkening back to ancient cultures where people who were neurodivergent or mentally challenged were seen as not only closer to God because of their, you know, implied or supposed purity, but sometimes we're even considered conduits,
yeah,
or mouthpieces of gods, And so I thought that's what that was. And so I'm sitting here like, and again, maybe this is all me just like projecting onto this film. But then when we get to the ending, everyone's like, oh, it's so horrific how people in cults take advantage of people who just had a tragedy. And they, you know, they give them a sense of acceptance. And so they trick people into being in the cult. And I was thought, oh, this is such a happy ending. And she's so happy there. And she doesn't have to have this rigid sense of, you know, the Judeo-Christian world. And she's able to finally be at a place that accepts her for who she is. And she's able to express her grief and move on past that and be in a place where she's genuinely loved for who she is. And so apparently I did not see the same movie other people saw, because I thought this was a great movie. I thought it was like a wonderfully happy ending, horrific, you know.
I think that's what makes it great, though, is that the same movie can be interpreted 5 different ways.
But like, yeah, no it's matter, just
no
kind
matter
of
how
like,
hard I try, I don't see it from a lot of people's perspectives. Like, for me, like, I can, as far as the ending and whatnot, like, I find that the close-up shot on her face as her face is quivering, you know, and it turns, like, slowly into a smile, and you just, like, feel her emotion of realizing that she's lost everything. She lost her whole family. She literally put her boyfriend to death. I mean, she killed him, you know?
Right.
And then she has no one, but then she has a group of people, you know, all she wanted was love and acceptance, and she couldn't find that with Christian, his friends, you know, they were all just, like, utter pieces of garbage, and no one was willing to share her pain or engage with her pain and suffering and grief, and she finally found, like, I almost cried, so, like, my eyes, like, I never cried, but, like, my eyes actually got, like, watery multiple times in this movie, because, like, I just found the subtlety of... especially the town, the cult, like the, you know, the pagan cult, just like how they would wail when she would cry, or even, in the ritual off of the cliff, when the elderly couple reached the end of their journeys and jumped off the cliff, you know, just like the sense of community. And then the very final shot of her looking just completely shocked and then turning to a smile. It was just, I found it so beautiful and simple. And yeah, like, I had the exact same interpretation of as you, Liz, that found it so beautiful that, like, this girl who's endured so much finally found, you know, her tribe, as it were, her cult, you know, at the end of the day, her community, where she's fully loved and accepted. And I found that to be just so beautiful. And then all of these other people, because after I watched it 3 times before I watched a single video. Interpretation or reaction. I watched it 3 times myself before I read anything, anybody else's opinion. And I just find that kind of the same thing. I feel that, like, a lot of movies that are more straightforward, people have generally the same interpretation. Midsommar kind of is far reaching, I would say. But you did initially mention, Ari Aster has said that, like you said, it's a breakup movie. He was going through a really nasty breakup, and, you know, when they burn down the building at the final, like, towards the final scene, it's supposed to symbolize, you know, throwing out all of your ex's shit, basically. You know, being done, like, trying to purge the memories, get rid of their things, to be, like, completely done with them. And I'm like, I almost wonder, because this movie is so multi-layered, at least I feel in my own interpretation, like, am I taking more than he even meant it to be? But then I'm like, no, he has to be playing coy to some degree, because this movie took way too much love, care, attention, and crafting. So, like,
I mean, the guy's name's Christian.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's a big jerk. Mm-hmm. I mean, that cannot be coincidence.
Always.
Agreed.
Especially when it's put up against, you know, a pagan adversary, as it were. It's almost always some sort of commentary on Christianity being a little bit, you know, hypocrites. I don't know, but, like, I completely agree with you. There's just so much. But... yeah, I love it. Like you said too, Liz, in the very first scene, it tells us the entire story in the very first scene, as you're moving through her through Danny's apartment. So the film begins, you know, with Danny and her parents. Her sister is basically bipolar, manic depressive, the whole bit. Her sister emails Danny, says goodbye. Danny can't get a hold of her. Eventually, gets a phone call that basically.
Oh, she also says that mom and dad are coming with me.
Yeah, mom and dad are coming with me. Exactly. And they certainly did, because they are dead. D-E-A-D. Now, question for you guys. The cult was looking forward to Danny coming. We're so excited, so excited. There is a theory that Pele is actually responsible somehow for the events of her sister and her parents killing themselves, which...
I disagree.
Actually a flower, like the flowers found at the commune. At the suicide on the nightstand, on the bed, I believe, there were a little, a couple things of flowers.
So I think it was actually a vase of flowers that makes it look like a ring of flowers the vase is behind a framed photograph of the family or of Danny or something. But also I think that Pele, because they make a comment later in the film, because Pele's always drawing and Ruben's always drawing and Pele keeps talking about how his parents died in a fire.
Right.
I'm like you, my parents died too. And she's like, no, you're not like me. You don't know what it's like. And she keeps getting upset. Pele's parents are like Ruben's parents. Pele's parents were brother and sister. Pele has the vision, just like Ruben has the vision. So I think Pele saw it and said, hey, I'm bringing these people because this is what's going to happen. And so they know that he has the sight.
Interesting. I didn't.
What? Oh, watch it
again. That was one of my discussion topics is like Pele's like connection to Danny and like how he knew that she was going to be special for his community.
But that entire theory, apparently everybody has that theory that Pele's connected to that in some way. But that to me personally does not make sense because correct me if I am wrong, Danny would have died most likely had she not become the May Queen.
That's my other topic. Yeah. So like if she, oh, so sorry. Go Madison.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I think I had messaged you that. Like, if she didn't win the little dance contest.
Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah, exactly. It was Dance Dance Revolution, if I remember correctly. And if she didn't win it, then she's not the May Queen. Would that have been too many, like, rituals then to kill her? Because isn't there a certain number or a certain amount that they have to do or, like, a certain way to do them?
Well, and then, a certain amount of people that they needed, and they had enough.
It
was four external, four internal, and one, like, whoever the May Queen picks, right?
Right.
And so I think they were, I'm kind of with Robin. Like, I don't see that Pele was this mastermind behind everything. I think he was, my interpretation was that he was happy to see everyone because they all had a really important role to play. Right. Like they could not have done the ritual without the people there who were going to die. Right. Like the I think the Australian couple or the
London couple. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the English couple. I'm sure they were very happy to see them. Right. Like because they had a vital role to play, like just as vital as the May Queen.
Right. To be sacrificed. But, and that's why that was like a discussion, because I had read so many different theories on it, and I wanted your guys' takes. I don't think he was connected either, but I don't know if it's because his parents had died that he had that connection with Danny, but I wanted to see if you guys, like...
So, seriously, rewatch it. He, just the way he talks to her, and then later on they do comment that he has the clear sight, too, and he keeps saying his parents, because they have... Their community's too small. They have to bring in outsiders for them to basically... bring in new blood. So they have to, the women can't, they can't intermarry.
They don't want 15 oracles at a time.
Right. And so, exactly. So I honestly believe that Pele was from an intermarriage and that he has the sight and that's why he's drawing all the time.
Yeah.
And he has the clear sight. And I think he saw it, but he doesn't, it's not so clear that he knows exactly what's going to happen. Like, he honestly didn't know she was going to be May Queen. He was so excited for her. Oh, Danny, you're the May Queen. That's great. He was honestly excited. He had no idea she was going to be May Queen.
I took it as he was happy that she wouldn't be sacrificed because he liked her. Like, you know, like, enjoyed her company.
Yes, and he did want her to be his girlfriend. He made that clear quite a few times.
Yeah, I thought it was so beautiful, like, Pele's interactions with Danny. Like, he genuinely loved her. And I think that they actually did a great job translating that on screen, how much Pele, you know, really did genuinely care for Danny. And kind of, like, juxtaposing that against, you know, Christian and Mark and Josh and, like, all the assholes who...
I couldn't take Mark seriously. Like, I know you're not supposed to, but who let him out of Toy Story is what I want to say.
Oh.
That's all I kept thinking. I know that takes away from the movie, but come on.
Can I make one more comment? So I was watching that when the video is about, you know, all the secret things. And so when Josh goes to bed before he goes to sneak out and take pictures of the sacred text for his thesis. So he goes to bed and they make a big point of showing him going to bed with his shoes on, which I interpreted to mean, ooh, look, everybody, he's going to sneak out because he's still wearing his shoes to bed. So he doesn't have to stop and put them on, right?
Yeah.
So this was like, so that symbolizes the cult, the, oh, that one cult Heaven where they,
who they killed themselves wearing their Nikes.
Yeah. The comet people. Mm-hmm. Who are they?
Heaven's Gate.
Yeah, those people. So it's like the symbolizing the Heaven's Gate people. I was like, whoa, that is such a stretch.
No, I
think it's to symbolize to the viewer, hey, he's going to sneak out in a minute.
Yeah. That's how I got it, but I guess maybe I didn't look deep enough.
So this is why I always take those things with a grain of salt. I was like, oh, come on, really? Yeah, I mean, I know you need to like BuzzFeed's 21 things you missed on Midsommar, but come on.
My favorite like bit of foreshadowing is when they get to the commune in the very beginning and they're walking by like kids playing and Mark, it has a shot of Mark looking at them and they're playing Skin the Fool.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
God, it's just like so many little pieces. I mean, starting in the very beginning when you're in Danny's apartment and then you're in Christian's apartment and there's a painting of a bear and, you know, they get there, they finally get to the commune and then the entire like tapestry of the painting on the wall or was it a tapestry or a wall painting in the communal sleeping?
It was like a big painting outside, I thought.
Of like literally panel by panel by panel.
Yeah.
Like the entire movie.
That's the one I text you about. And I was like, explain this hair pie thing.
Who amongst us has never put a pube in someone's pie? It's just...
That was the joke while we were watching it, because I had texted you that, and then Madison and I were saying ridiculous things at that point, too.
It's just so many little pieces with, you know, symbolism and like foreshadowing. But let's talk about, is it the Aristupa or Aristupa?
The Logan's Run.
Yeah, that shocked me. I was not expecting that. I was, you know, already in love with the movie. I'm like, you know, I like gory, more extreme films, but they're not the be-all, end-all, you know, for me by any stretch of the imagination. But, like, I was not expecting it to be that graphic at all. When they jumped off of the cliff and then...
Yeah.
I was not expecting that at all.
There was a good death and a bad death. But they shared in the bad death.
Right?
And that was and then that was beautiful. It was like shock. Oh my God, that's disgusting. And then, oh my God, they're crying because he's hurting and still alive. Like,
well, I didn't get that at first. I'm like, why are they mocking him? Like, howling. What are these monsters doing?
That's the first
thing.
And then
as it went on, I'm like, oh, okay. I really like that.
But the same thing happened in the fire at the end, because they're supposed to be given something that'll make them not feel the pain. Yeah. And when the one guy did definitely feel the pain, then they started sharing in his pain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But like the cliff jumping, that is the first time where they share, like we as a viewer see, right, that they're sharing someone else's pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And did anyone watch the deleted scenes yet?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, okay. Well, when you watch it, then I won't give it away. But the river ritual I thought was super interesting.
I will watch it as soon as we're done here.
Yeah. Yeah. YouTube it. I was looking because I wanted to see the director's cut scene that was cut. And it was just like, I think 4 or 5, I want to say, deleted scenes. But I thought that part was interesting and I had questions, but that's okay.
What I would also, too, like to bring up is also one last point with the cliff jumping scene. I was not expecting that, but they actually broke the fourth wall, which is not a very common technique, especially in horror movies, where do you guys remember when it was about to happen?
We stared directly into the camera?
And he stared directly into the camera. Yeah, like they actually broke the fourth wall, which another famous movie that does that is Michael Haneke's Funny Games, if any of you guys have seen that.
So the difference is usually when you break the fourth wall, it's not just staring directly at the camera. It's where you actually basically address the audience.
Ari Aster actually commented on that and said that he did, in fact, insert breaking the fourth wall. He was trying to bring them more into it. So he actually himself considered it breaking the fourth wall.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't recognize it as that, but I believe you.
Yeah, it's not as quite as direct as Deadpool or Funny Games. You know,
or like Funny Games, yeah. Because Funny Games, they do directly. And so I liked Funny Games, actually, just side note and total little digression, until the rewind scene. And I was furious after that. And they totally lost me because it's cheating. I don't like cheating in movies. You know that. You know how I feel about that.
No, I totally
You want to talk about the rewind scene?
I do. Have you seen both the original and the remake?
I have not seen the remake. Because I heard it was shot for shot, and I didn't see the point.
It is actually really good. I highly suggest the remake. It is shot for shot, but it's beautiful. But yeah, like, so I find that, like, him staring, it actually, like, was a very effective usage of breaking the fourth wall for me. It kind of, like, it really was unsettling to have him, like, you know, this powder-looking motherfucker stare at a camera, you know, like, directly at me. I'm like, oh, why are you looking at me? But, so I thought that was unique.
I looked up some of the, like, rituals, trying to figure out like where the ideas came from, and you know the one with Simon where he's like sprawled out towards the end,
the Viking blood eagle.
Yeah, like I thought that was interesting that like it goes back to IMDb actually had it when I googled it, the Viking ritual,
mm-hmm. which
and if, that they're still alive for a while and they essentially like bleed out before they die.
If you actually did any of you watch this show, the TV show Vikings?
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember when they did that, Liz?
No.
They actually do a blood eagle on the show Vikings. And
oh, cool.
So basically one guy betrayed everyone, and so they gave him an honorable death, which was the blood eagle. So somehow that's honorable. So they literally cut your back and then pretty much pull open your rib cage, and you're alive forever. Yeah. And Viking,
they sever it from the spine with a sharp tool.
Exactly.
And then you're supposed to have wings with your lungs.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And you're still alive. And in Viking culture, you could not wail, cry, or express verbal pain, audible pain in any way. Otherwise, you would not get into Valhalla.
So back to the whole dying in grief and things like that. When Vikings died, like when a chieftain died, they would drink and sing songs and put the chieftain on a boat. They would have a girl who would be thrilled and honored to be chosen to join the chieftain in Valhalla. And so she would get drunk with them. Usually they'd give her some drugs too. She'd have sex with all the guys. Then they would put her with the chieftain. And then they would put the boat out, set the boat on fire. And then the chick and the dead chieftain would go off to Valhalla and burn.
Wow.
It was a big happy thing. Yay, everybody's going to be dead. So
that's what I want at my funeral, you guys.
All right, I'll add that to the list. All right, so other discussion question I had was Pele's family. So he says that they died in a fire. Do you think that it was just a house fire, or do you think there was some sort of like ritual engulfed in their death?
So I'm actually torn because supposedly that big ritual only happens every 90 years. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I honestly kind of feel like there was something ritualistic about it.
Right. And especially off of your theory, if he's technically like an oracle, maybe like they're no longer needed because they did their part for the society. Right.
Right.
I just thought that was interesting that like, you know, both his parents died and
in the fire.
Yeah, and that gave him that connection with Danny a little bit more, like, to have, like, kind of a common ground. And, like, was it kind of like theirs, where they're essentially, I don't want to say murdered, because that's part of their society, like, to do these rituals, but were they murdered?
I honestly don't think he had anything to do with Danny's parents' murder. I don't like that theory at all. I do think that it was her sister. Because, I mean, her sister had a history of threatening to do that kind of stuff for a while.
Right. I wasn't saying he was part of it. I mean, like,
That's a theory that people have been saying, though. Yeah. So, but I do think that his family I think that that might have been ritualistic for his family. And I do believe that his family, that his parents were brother and sister. And I do believe that he was an oracle. And that's why he was drawing. I think he was like Reuben. He was a seer.
Like that would, yeah, that would totally make sense if he was. Although, like, I guess the inbred genes didn't hurt him as much as some of the others.
Right, right. That's why he was able to go out in the world and go to college and bring these people back.
I mean, maybe.
So overall, with the acting on the film, like, what did you guys think of the acting, the cast?
I thought it was really good. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I thought it was really well cast.
Same. I just didn't like Sid.
But even he's even really how they good. Him, like, he's like a good like shithead.
No, he really is. He really is. No, I just kept thinking of like him hurting toys the whole time. Like his face, like they're identical.
You really need to see Bandersnatch.
Okay.
So he's British.
Really?
Yeah.
We're both like, what?
And he always plays Americans, and usually he actually plays Southern, like racist Americans. He has a whole career out of playing racist Southern Americans. It's hilarious. And he's British.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely see Bandersnatch on Netflix. The Dark Mirror episode.
The Choose Your Own Adventure, Black Mirror. Right, where you can like pick what they do to a degree.
Oh, cool.
He's fantastic in it.
But yeah, overall, guys, I think that Midsommar, for some reason, it's just like... none of you have seen Dancer in the Dark, right? Dancer in the
Dark. Oh, I hated that movie. Okay, I love Bjork. Like, I genuinely, like, love her. Like, okay, love her, like, for real.
We're done,
she's in my pantheon of goddesses. But, along with, like, Joan Jett and Dolly Parton and Pam Grier. But that movie, I hate Lars von Trier so much. Oh. I swear to God, I'm going to punch him in the junk if I ever meet him. Oh. I just hate that man so much. But go on.
That's my second favorite movie of all time.
Oh my God, Robin.
I've seen it 40 times and I sob like Martyrs, a child every time.
Has Martyrs been demoted again? Did you finally see The Hammer?
Oh my God.
I thought that was number two. Sorry. I mean, now if it's number three.
Dancer in the Dark has always been like my top two favorite films have always been Martyrs and Dancer in the Dark. And
Dancer in the Dark is like one of the most depressing movies I've ever seen. It's like,
it really is.
It's my second most hated movie I've ever seen. My most hated movie being Ghost of Mars. And I don't think the only reason I hate that movie is because I love John Carpenter so much. And I feel like he personally let me down. Like he made this movie like, ha ha ha, I'm going to disappoint you so much, Lizanne. You're going to go see it opening night and you're going to be so upset with me because I just called it in.
That's how I felt about Hostel.
I have to this. I have to know. We're stopping everything right now. I have to know exactly what you hated about Dance of the Dark because it is the most depressing. I consider it the most depressing movie ever made. Like it's just, my soul dies. I've seen like.
So that was Lars von Trier, right?
Yeah, it was Lars von Trier.
Okay. I should have known. I should have known because I saw Breaking the Waves. So I should have known because that man hates women. Okay. I should have known. Because that movie was awful. But I went anyway. I went anyway. Because it's Bjork, and I love Bjork. So I'm watching, oh, poor little Bjork, and she's going blind, and she just wants her son, saving up all the money. And this guy, like, steals all her money, and then, you know, and she's going to get hanged, and she's, oh, my God. It's just, it's so sad. And I was so furious. And then later, you find out how he treated her. Like he like was assaulting her. So, I mean,
long story, very, very short, abbreviated version for our viewers. Dancer in the Dark is a film by Lars von Trier and Bjork. It takes place in the 1950s. And like, do you remember what state it was in? I don't think Pennsylvania. I forgot.
Wait, I thought it was like Nebraska.
Nebraska or somewhere. And Bjork is an immigrant and she has a macular degenerative disease
yeah, or something.
Exactly. Where she eventually goes blind and she has a small son, like a young son, who's also has the same disease and he's going blind. And so she
can have an operation or something.
Yeah. And so she works in a factory with Catherine Deneuve. And so basically Bjork is like completely blind, but her best friend helps her operate like heavy ass machinery. And long story short, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so Bjork's been saving up money to get her son this like life changing operation to let him see. And her next door neighbor, like, and her friend is a police officer. And he actually, because she's blind, he hides in her house one day and steals all of her fucking money. And so she discovers it and they have a tussle and she ends up grabbing his killing gun him. And killing him. And so Bjork, this like sweet, blind little old immigrant woman, ends up going into prison and being put on death row. And the movie ends with her like counting the steps to the hanging chamber. It's like, you know, one.
The gallows.
The gallows. And her singing is beautiful and sad. And then it goes like silent with her screaming. And then all of a sudden, like screaming. And then silence as you hear her neck crack and she falls. It is the most devastating shit I've ever fucking seen. And it's so like, but how does that translate? Sorry. And then we'll go back to this. But like, how does that translate? I hate Lars von Trier. I think he's a terrible.
Oh, he hates women. I mean, I've seen, was it Dogville? He hates women. Plus, you heard about her Me Too story, right?
Oh my, with him. Okay. Well, yeah, that's what's so hard is like he actually abused her on that set. He Pascal Laugier'd Bjork.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad, but it's
so
like,
no. I mean, he literally hates women. He's gross.
He is gross, but that is like the saddest movie ever made. So it's perfect. I think it's perfection from a film
standpoint. It's just too depressing. Like, I like horror, but there's a line.
If you have
Robin just likes being depressed.
I do. Like, I like to feel.
Well, there's cathartic crying. I get that. I totally get that. But that, I mean,
that's more than cathartic crying. That's like, if you have any sort of depressive thoughts or suicidal ideation, this movie will send you over the edge.
It will. Or if, I mean, because Bjork is like the cutest, sweetest little thing. And oh my God.
Oh God.
It's watch this poor, sweet little thing get horribly, horribly. Everything that bad that could happen does happen. And then it gets even worse.
Yeah.
Well, you sold it. I'm sure everyone's downloading it as we speak.
I've gotten a lot of people to watch it and they all love it. They all thank me for it. And they're like, that is the most depressing thing. I sobbed. I ugly cried. I sobbed like a child and now I want to kill myself. But thank you. So you're all welcome.
And so and also you'll learn this about me. I try to never trash anyone, especially because I would like to work in this business eventually someday. I hate Lars von Trier.
Yeah,
there and are, I'm sorry. I never work with the man. I'm okay.
Well, you know, I between like the way that he's treated women, and then also his Nazi comments at the Cannes Film Festival.
Didn't hear about that one.
Oh yeah, look it up. I won't get into.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll believe you.
Yeah, look it up. It actually got him banned from Cannes for 3 years. And it's like cinematic perfection. But he does hate women. I can't believe you saw Breaking the Waves. I was like.
Of course, it was huge. It was like this big, like, oh my God, have you seen Breaking the Waves? And then I saw all his Dogma stuff. And I went, oh, that's really disturbing. Have you seen the Dogma stuff?
I have. I've actually seen every. I love Melancholia, too. I'm so sorry.
Okay, so that's Thomas Vinterberg, and I like him. I like him a lot. Have you seen Dear Wendy? Actually, Lars von Trier wrote that.
Yes, he wrote it.
And I actually like it. It's got Jamie Bell and, what's her name? She was in, she was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. She played the drummer.
That's another great movie, but I don't know. Scott Pilgrim, the drummer, was
Allison Pill. Okay, Allison Pill is in it, and Jamie Bell and somebody else. Anyway, sorry, digressing. Anyway, Dear Wendy's really good. It's actually really good, despite being written by Lars von Trier. It's directed by Thomas Vinterberg, and he has a much gentler touch as a director. He did The Invitation, which is disturbing in its own way, but very good.
I love The Invitation.
That's really good. I did not see that twist coming.
I did not either. And the end was really creepy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're like digressing hardcore. But like,
I'm sorry.
No.
I went through a Danish film phase in the like late 90s.
I just had to understand. I totally get your hatred of Lars von Trier. I hate him too. He's a disgusting human being. But like, I will fight anybody over Bjork. She was perfection.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So Midsommar, final thoughts, bringing it back around.
That's right, this is about Midsommar, isn't it?
I could talk like 80 days about Dancer in the Dark, though, but... So, final thoughts on Midsommar.
I loved it.
Yep. Yeah, watch it.
Yeah, agreed.
I now have the t-shirt. I ordered the soundtrack on vinyl. I have a limited edition poster hanging above my desk that finally came in the mail the other day. Like, I've gone all out with Midsommar.
Madison made us go into the forest to find flowers to make her a flower crown.
And everyone had braids.
Mm-hmm. Lots of braids.
Did you guys see the pictures? Now it would make sense to you since you've seen Midsommar, all of the like Halloween costumes of people going to Michael's and like stocking up on flowers, and then they would like get into a wheelchair and cover themselves with the flowers.
Awesome. I have seen the May Queen. Yeah, there's a couple. Oh my gosh, it was a man, the funny one that I saw on Twitter, and he just made it completely ridiculous. There's flowers everywhere, and it was amazing.
It's so funny. I don't even know why I find it so funny. People were even
in the couple's costume with the bear.
Yes.
Yeah. That poor bear, by the way. Like, stop killing things.
But you don't see
it. Are we not going to talk about the bear? It's a bear.
Yeah. So in Midsommar, there's a bear. And why, Liz, I will let you talk about this. Why did they do it with Christian in particular, do you think?
You know, there's got to be some kind of bear symbolism that I just don't get. I'm sure there's something too.
Like her painting at the beginning, like of the blonde girl kissing the bear, like maybe kissing him goodbye.
I think it's a story. Like, I think it's a myth or a legend, but I don't know it.
Probably.
No, I actually read that it is actually a story. It's a Swedish like folk tale that involves a bear, but I don't recall. You're correct.
The second it shows though in the cage and it looks so sad and I'm like, just free the bear. I don't care. Kill everyone. Skin them. I don't care. Just free the bear.
Amanda, I don't think they really killed that bear.
I think they did. They thought about it, and that's not okay.
I think it's just pretend.
But still, I don't want to see it. Oh. I want that bear to just...
I bet if we watch the movie again, at the end, we'll say no animals were harmed in the making of this film.
I know, but...
No bears were harmed in the making of this film.
I know, but like the cage, and it just... That was the saddest part for me, is that poor bear in the cage.
They pay people a lot of money to make sure, one, the bear is okay and having a good time, and two, they make very realistic-looking bear, like fake bears.
I know, but you get into the movie, okay?
So Ari Aster apparently has explained the bear. He says... The bear is a very important symbol in Norse mythology and in Scandinavian folklore. It was loaded in all of the right ways to sort of tie it to Christian in the way that he dies. It occurred to me at some point in doing research for the film that this is the right way to send Christian off.
They should have just cut him up and fed him to the bear.
So, I don't know, like, what the symbolism is behind the bear and whatnot, but apparently we should research more and then that will tell us exactly why that is relevant. But... The final shot of that house was gorgeous, though, of it burning.
The whole thing was gorgeous. Oh, my God.
As I said in I guested last night on a podcast, on Mike Merriman's podcast, if you guys remember him from back in the day. He does a podcast called No More Room in Hell. Check it out. We did the Bloodthirsty Trilogy, this 1970s Japanese vampire films. But so as I stated last night, verbatim, I said Midsommar is so gorgeous that it literally I could ferociously masturbate over it all day long. And it is the truth. So, but yeah, Midsommar is an amazing movie. Go buy it. Worship it, love it, and the fun part about it is trying to figure out all the symbolisms, like all the symbolism, all of the Easter eggs, all of it. But really quick question, and I'm gonna then, go ahead.
I was gonna say, and then watching all these videos that show you that, oh my God, what the hell's wrong with you? Why are you seeing all this weird stuff in there when no one else sees that?
It's like when people watched Hostel back in the day and they were like, this is a socioeconomic commentary on rich people and capitalism. And then Eli Roth was like, I just wanted to make a fucking nasty ass movie with lots of gore and blood.
Like, I fucking hate that movie. Fuck Hostel. Yeah. No one warned me.
But quick question. What was her face? And say, when you watch this movie, there's a face in the tree. Did you guys see that on your first watch? I know, Amanda, you did.
No.
I did only because I saw that article that literally was, did you catch the face in the tree? And I'm like, what face? I love those, though. Like, The Haunting of Hill House. Can you find all these hidden ghosts? Like,
so I thought it was going to be like that. Like, it was like actually like, you know, the guy fixing the clock. Like, it's going to be like a ghost. I didn't realize it was going to be like the trees were cut to look like the face. Like, it was actually the tree, you know, was the sister. I didn't know that. And I actually had to like Google it. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, oh, yeah, I totally didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't either. And it scared the holy bejesus out of me when I saw it. It didn't look right.
It's cool looking,
yeah, but I totally didn't catch that at all when I was watching it.
So watch it like 80 times. I didn't either. It will literally take you at least, like, I've watched it 4 times now and I'm still learning shit every watch. So watch it and keep watching it. But I guess that's it for Midsommar. So next week we are going to be doing American Horror Story Rest in Pieces, which should prove to be a good episode. A lot of everything is coming into place right now with American Horror Story. And then we're
glad you finally are on board.
I'm on board. I'm fully on board. I'm so on board. Yeah. I'm here for the ride. Finally. And then we're doing a game, kind of like get to know you game segment. We talk a lot about horror movies and like what our, you know, tastes are in film. We're kind of doing a more in-depth game segment that will carry on episode to episode and crown the winner. And so imagine like an all horror, like team death match, fight to the death.
And if you have any ideas on which games you want us to play or any information, any fun facts or something that you want from us, tweet us.
Don't leave it that open-ended, Amanda.
Well, I'm just going to send them pictures of Madison and MeUndies. Like, that's all they're going to get.
And then...
And lots of Google images.
Oh, my God.
Well, just take that out. I can't think of any games.
Yeah, we'll... So we were thinking about doing like either trivia, you know, related to each movie that we watch, have a game, basically each week have a game master. There are four of us, four weeks in a month. And so each week having a game master, and then whoever wins, at the end of the month, you know, finding something fun with that, trivia related to a movie or two truths and a lie. We're trying here, guys. So what games would you like us to play in our show? And then also we will be doing, a review of Inside, both the French version and the Spanish-made but English-speaking remake. So, until then, have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.